This show furnished by NeuroHealth, LLC.
You're listening to The Dr. D Show about neuropsychology and well-being.
Get the knowledge you must have to live a powerful, positive life.
The Dr. D Show. Here for you.
Welcome, listeners, to the Dr. D Show. It is wonderful to have you with me. I am a clinical and forensic neuropsychologist bringing to you the first show in neuropsychology and well-being. This show is designed to be educational. It's not meant to replace professional mental health advice or therapy. I do suggest that if you suffer from a particular disorder, please do reach out to professional help. With that in mind, in this show, I always like to introduce another topic that covers brain functioning and mental health and in between, how those areas actually affect our day-to-day understanding of how we move about our life. Today, I'd like to talk about a topic that's important for every single human being and animal. I'm going to talk about sexuality and sexuality in the brain. How do we understand sexuality, what kind of conditions can affect the way that we function sexually, what kind of medications can affect the way that we function, what kind of experiences in life can augment the way we eventually behave in the sexual realm of our life, and how do we understand sexuality over time, because sexuality, like any other area of human functioning, is developmental, and it does change over time as we progress in age. So we will start somewhere in the beginning. Many studies have been conducted to understand human sexuality better, not just from a behavioral component and intimacy, but also which areas of the brain are involved in this type of activity, and how do we understand the process, and how do we understand sexual dysfunction, and there is an umbrella of types of disorders that have to do with sexuality. We have a very popular show now on television, Masters of Sex, talking about the historical anecdotal expression of what was going on with Dr. Masters and his and Miss Johnson's, his colleague, through the process of understanding and learning sexuality, their amazing discoveries that allowed for helping individuals with an array of sexual dysfunction, and what stimulation, what is the role of stimulation that have to do with sexuality. So why that's so important, because although it's an area that for historically, for many generations, has been a taboo, it is so important and essential in human happiness, and it's an inevitable area to go into, that we cannot ignore it. It's important to understand also that, and it's something that I always encourage individuals to think about, is that even when we come from a religious background or a conservative background where there are guidelines to how sexuality should be perceived, what kind of practices are encouraged or not, and at which stage in life. Overall, above and beyond, it's important to understand that sexuality doesn't end when a person gets married. Sexuality, in a way, truly just begins, in the sense of understanding sexuality and intimacy combined, and noticing what is happening to an individual who is in a monogamistic relationship. How do we encourage couples and educate couples on continuing to enliven their sexuality and actually benefit from other types of cognitive and emotional processes that can strengthen the sexual practices within the relationship? And so basically what I'm saying, in essence, is that sexuality is dynamic, it is developmental, it is very powerful in the sense that there are all kinds of things that can affect the way that we relate to our environment. In fact, it's important to understand that sexual attraction is not a static thing. What we are exposed to as we grow up, what we see and what we experience, what our senses experience, is going to encourage our sense of attraction to develop in one direction or another. There is also a lot of conditioning that's occurring. When you look at the signs of fetishes, for example, if a person is exposed to a particular object while that person is experiencing sexual stimulation enough times, that person is more likely to connect or pair that object they've been exposed to while they were stimulated, connect that to sexual stimulation. And if that occurs enough times, that person might be sexually aroused, stimulated, and even achieve an orgasm if they see that object, just by seeing that object. So it's important to understand that there is some conditioning that we go through. And that conditioning can be very powerful. So let's give a scenario. If a young boy in his early teenage years is being exposed, let's say, to red scarves while he's being sexually stimulated, if he's exposed enough time to a red scarf while he's sexually stimulated, he's more likely later on in life to be sexually aroused by just by looking at red scarves, which you would think one doesn't relate to the other, but then so many times that actually essentially occurs. So that's important to understand that, because when we understand that, we know that our brain and our network of stimulation in our brain is very vulnerable to the experiences we're going through. So when we engage in sexual behaviors, we need to think also whether we would like our brain to be exposed to those activities and behaviors. Would we want our brain to be conditioned one way or the other? And it's because our brain is vulnerable that way, should we look at images, let's say, of children while we are interested in sexual stimulation? Well, probably not, right? And I'm being funny here, but we shouldn't. We shouldn't be exposed to pictures of children while we are sexually stimulated, because we do not want to encourage our imagination to link images of children with sexual arousal. But can it occur? Absolutely. And that takes me to the next concept that I want to talk about sexual stimulation, and that is the power of imagination. Our imagination is a very powerful tool. It's a powerful tool when we create our business, when we fall in love, when we have a dream that we want to bring to expression and successfully. Our imagination is very powerful, and it has an active role also in sexuality. Now, our imagination in the brain and networks of memorization, okay, where we store memories as well, are highly linked to sexuality. More often than not, we will go through an amazing sexual experience. We will encode that experience in our memory. And if we want to, we can retrieve that memory and even go through the physiological response of being aroused all over again, even just by thinking about that sexual experience. Now, there are several areas of the brain that are connected to sexuality. As expected, many of them are in the temporal lobe. The temporal lobe is where we store not only our emotions in the amygdala, but also our memories in our hippocampus, and auditory processing and language processing. And it tells you really that our temporal lobes are highly active while we go through a sexual experience. But also other areas of our brain are active. Our frontal lobe, right there in the front, our CEO of the brain, which I will talk about in length soon. And also our parietal lobe, which is the area that's responsible for processing certain sensory information and motor information. All of those areas come together and become stimulated and active when we go through a sexual experience. And so with that in mind, after the break, what I will do is go through the process of explaining more what is happening to us in the brain when we're experiencing a sexual event and stimulation, and what kind of conditions we know about that desire is impaired, and where do we see that in the brain. So stay with me after these announcements. This is Dr. D. Gaines, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist. Don't leave town.
Want to know more about California's legalization of marijuana? Now there's a website that answers all of your burning questions. It's called thecanifornian.com. That's C-A-N-N as in cannabis. Pulling resources from 25 California newsrooms, this mobile-friendly site is frequently updated with stories, photos, and features on the entire cannabis culture, from legal, business, and health issues to the myriad of ways to grow and consume it. Log on to thecanifornian.com today and look for it on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Grassroots coverage at its finest.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 877-735-7485 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 877-735-7485 to take your call now. Call 877-735-7485. That's 877-735-7485. Again, 877-735-7485.
One of the most popular new shows on TV this season is about a jury consultant, but it's more than Hollywood fiction. This weekend on Champions of Justice, Tom Girardi interviews a real jury consultant, Philip Anthony. Does facial hair influence a jury? What's the female factor? And what can lawyers ask potential jurors? Tune in Champions of Justice Saturday morning at 11 and Sunday night at 10 here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
The thought of my sons growing up without me inspired me to quit smoking.
I talked to my doctors, and then I threw away all my cigarettes, ashtrays, and lighters.
I started exercising instead of smoking.
Getting support from friends online kept me on track.
Staying away from alcohol when I was first quitting was key.
Instead of smoking after I ate, I'd get up and take a walk.
I missed having a cigarette in my hand, so I'd hold a pen or a straw, anything.
Until I knew I wouldn't give in to temptation, I spent more time with my friends who didn't smoke.
I went to places that were smoke-free.
I didn't stay quit the very first time I tried.
I kept on trying, and I learned something each time.
Do whatever it takes.
No matter how many times it takes.
I quit.
I quit.
I quit.
We did it, so can you.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
You two are the biggest.
I know.
Yentas.
We are, I know. That's our program director came in and dropped off my lunch.
Dropped off snacks.
I know, it's so
like
good.
Like, you guys are seriously like church ladies.
I'm so happy.
Oh, thank you. Oh, yeah, I was just so hungry.
I am so
hungry. Well, I had some extra popcorn in my purse, so here.
How dare you, Mike? You're just jelly. You want some popcorn?
Yeah! Popcorn! No, I don't want popcorn. My body's a temple.
Heatherwood. Weekdays, noon to 3 on KABC.
You're listening to The Dr. D Show about neuropsychology and well-being.
Get the knowledge you must have to live a powerful, positive life.
The Dr. D Show. Here for you.
Welcome, listeners, back to the Dr. D Show. We are talking today about sexuality and the brain and how do we understand just a bit more what sexuality looks like in our brain. Well, so what I mentioned before is that there are various kinds of areas of the brain that are affected in sexuality. It's a very dynamic, powerful process in your brain, as you all know, and in the rest of your body. We talked about the temporal lobes, which are the sides of your brain, which are very, very stimulated with the process of being sexually stimulated. We talked about the memory areas of the brain kicking in, your imagination, your amygdala, which is where we process very raw and primitive activities. And I want to talk about the amygdala and sexuality because, you know, when we think about sexuality and we think how primitive it can be, human beings are more of an intellectual individuals, and we tend to have a lot of involvement of the frontal lobe as we go about our day. We use skills that are more sophisticated that animals don't use, right? We use language and certain types of words to express ourselves and certain kind of social norms. But when it comes to sexuality, individuals are always amazed that, well, how is it that this highly intelligent person was involved in, you know, savage sex? Well, to me and to anyone that deals with the brain and knows just a bit about the brain, there's no surprise there. And why there's no surprise there is because sexuality, along with all the other areas on the brain that I was talking about, is based in an area of the brain that's very fundamental, that's responsible. We call it the primitive brain. All animals have it, our amygdala. And that's where lots of primitive processes take place, such as food and sleep and aggression. And so, you know, when people say, well, how is this person, you know, get aroused by violence and sexuality combined? Or what's his name? George from Seinfeld, that was eating sandwiches when he was having sex, right? It was a hilarious episode, right? He had to have a sandwich before he was having sex, and it was just so great for him that he was stimulated both ways. That's actually not a surprise for us who know the brain, because food is a certain stimulation, and sexuality is a stimulation, but also aggression is a stimulation, and all of those factors are primitive to us. So that is why you can take a person who's very intelligent and well-spoken and educated, and yet that same exact person can be highly sexually aroused by behavior that you would consider very primitive. That is actually because that's how our brain works. Now, can somebody be stimulated or engaged sexually by a person who's very bright, who speaks very well? Absolutely. This is a different type of stimulation, and a different area of your brain gets stimulated. And we talk about that often, which is the CEO of your brain, the frontal lobe. So that CEO can get very stimulated by meeting another person who is sophisticated, something that your frontal lobe enjoys. But I also want to talk about the frontal lobe in a different way. Studies of individuals, of males particularly, that have deficiency in desire, okay? And that's, by the way, a fascinating area for us neuropsychologists, because we, more often than not, when we have patients coming through the door, they may have one, two, or three types of disorders, but along with that, more often than not, there is some sexual disorder or sexual dysfunction or sexual difficulty or intimacy. I'm putting all of those now in front of you that show up along with the other conditions that we're seeing. Okay, so I'm going to give you a great example right now that a lot of people don't know about. Patients with Parkinson's may suffer from hypersexuality, and they can suffer from that so much that they are at a higher rate or increased rate to develop sexual addiction altogether. Now, I had a patient, look at this combo, a rare case of an early onset Parkinson's with a teenager. Okay, so that's rare. And why that's so powerful is because what happens when we are teens? Our hormones kick in. And when those hormones kick in when we're teenagers, we already have overt sexual behavior. Now, add to that the fact that our brain is not fully developed when we are teenagers, and it happens to be that the area in the brain that's not fully developed is where we make decisions, we think through things that we do, we follow through with what we want to do. That area is not fully developed until our mid-20s. So now you've got somebody who's high on hormones, their brain is not fully developed, they're not particularly that great at making decisions or following through with them, and on top of that, that same area is responsible for inhibiting behavior and emotions. So they're not very good at controlling those, okay? Now let's add to that a medication that increases sexual behavior. Well, now you've got a problem. So here I was having a patient who was a teenager, female teenager with early onset Parkinson's, who has erratic sexual behavior. Part of the reasons was because she was on medication that increases sexuality. And, you know, effectively what happened to her in her life was she wasn't understood. Her parents were very upset. She was bullied because of that type of behavior. She got into problems with other teens. She developed more depression. She was looked down upon. She didn't understand what's going on. She didn't know that the medication that she was on causing this type of behavior. So there was a lot of guilt and depression, and lo and behold, suicidal behavior. And down we go, the path of mental health. So when I describe the brain to you, I'm making the case and showing you how, you know, brain-related activities can directly link to what your life is going to look like. And they're directly linked to how you're going to feel and behave. And if treatment providers that you work with don't connect the dots, they don't see the bigger picture and why there are things that are going on this way, they're often not going to treat the core of the problem, and treatment is not going to be effective. And all you do is maybe getting medication for your depression or for your anxiety, but you're not dealing with the actual problem. So I just showed you a very real case of how real life gets affected by all kinds of factors that have to do with your brain that you might not even know about. So that was one example. Here's another interesting thing. The frontal part of your brain has an area called the orbitofrontal, or the medial orbitofrontal. That area is responsible for sexual desire. And interestingly enough, that area has to actually be very active for you to be sexually very inhibited. And if you want to be sexually expressive, that area has to shut down. You got to let go of those inhibitions. That boss has to let go of that in order for you to be sexually active. So, if the boss of your brain is very uptight, upset, nervous, concerned, you're not going to be able to be sexually active. That's one of the reasons why males, when they age, are at a higher chance of developing sexual dysfunction and problems of desire, not just because their testosterone is going down, but also because cognitively, they are more concerned about the way that they're going to function altogether. All kinds of things come into the sexual act. Self-esteem, age, concerns about age, maybe there's an age gap. Failure at work. How many men cannot function sexually because they experienced failure, professional failure, or a crisis? In fact, research shows that it's highly linked to sexual dysfunction. If you don't feel good about yourself, you might not function very well in bed. So now the boss of your brain doesn't want to let go. It's holding on to information. And that type of control doesn't allow eventually for the person to actually successfully complete an intercourse and follow through with their plan. And so it's important to understand that sexuality is this way very, very sensitive to the way your brain works and to your day-to-day functioning. When we're going to go into a break soon, and when we come back, I want to talk about some other areas of the brain that are involved, some interesting facts people don't know about sexuality, and understanding why intimacy is so important in that process, and why the magical word of love, how do we understand love, how does that concept assist us in having a lifelong of successful sexual activity? So don't leave town, stay with me, and we will be together again after the commercials.
In winter, you can practically hear your skin changing. Drying out, flaking, tightening, becoming itchy, irritated, and inflamed. You need the fast relief of Cortisone 10 Intensive Healing Anti-Itch Cream. Unlike regular lotions, Cortisone 10 relieves itch and irritation with 1% hydrocortisone, the strongest non-prescription itch medicine, plus 7 healing moisturizers. With Cortisone 10, winter can just sound fun again. Cortisone 10, feel the heal. Use as directed.
If you're stressed out about credit card debt, medical bills, or collection accounts, there is help. For over 20 years, Family Financial Education Foundation, a nonprofit organization, has helped thousands of people get out of debt. And their number one source of new clients is referrals from existing clients. Call now and find out what Family Financial can do for you. Call 877-789-4173. 877-789-4173. Not available in all states, not a loan company.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on their very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
We might have a new studio, but we'll have the same old fresh-baked outrage delivered fresh to your radio. Join McIntyre in the Morning from our new home in Culver City. That's Monday morning on the next McIntyre in the Morning, 5 to 10, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
You're listening to The Dr. D Show about neuropsychology and well-being.
Get the knowledge you must have to live a powerful, positive life.
The Dr. D Show. Here for you.
Welcome back, listeners, to The Dr. D Show. I am Dr. D, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist. It is wonderful to have you with us. Today, the topic is one that's spicy and always on everybody's mind, sexuality. But we're talking about it from a different perspective, about the brain, about disorders, about depression, and about aging. And what happens to us as we develop throughout life, and what happens to our sexuality, and what are the things we need to think about? I talked about different areas of the brain. I talked about our primitive amygdala, the primitive brain. I talked about our boss of the brain, the CEO in the front of your head, and how those become active. I want to talk today also about other areas, and one of them is disorders, and understanding that there's all kinds of sexual disorders. And when we talk about sexual disorders, we need to understand that, first of all, when we think about sexuality, it is not black or white. A lot of individuals would like to believe that we are fully straight or we are fully gay, and there is no in between. Research shows, and the way we know and understand the way sexuality is and the brain, it's a continuum, okay? There are some individuals that are closer to the heterosexual side of the continuum, and other ones are closer to the homosexual side of the continuum, and that throughout life, based on settings and experiences, a person might move towards one side or the other side. It's important to understand that because we know that it's true. When you take a group of males and put them together in prison and have no females, no access to females, a good percent of them might start developing behavior, sexual behaviors that will be oriented towards males. Same thing that we know about putting together a group of females. Not everyone will, right? And there's going to be a variety of that. There's going to be different people falling in different part of it, of the continuum. But that is something that we know. Sexuality is malleable, and it's a lot about the experiences you're going through and what you allow for you to be exposed to. So I always tell people who want to engage in all kinds of activities, I always say, before you do, think about if this is something you really want to physically encode or encode in your memory, because we're not completely immune to what we're going through. We don't just compartmentalize that and move on with life. It will eventually have an effect on us because the brain is like that. The brain is creative. It creates images and it creates memories and stories. And when you get involved again sexually, those are eventually going to be involved in that. They're going to come into the bedroom. I want to talk about young people and when they get exposed to sexual experiences. One common phenomena that happens with some young males who go through sexual abuse or molestation at a very young age by males is that if they have gone through extensive sexual abuse for many, many years, they may sometimes become very confused when they're older as to whether they are attracted to males or females. And one of the reasons why that confusion occurs is because an arousal, and a male arousal as well, is very physiological. It's also physiological with females, but it's very powerful, and it's a physiological process. And when, for example, a young boy is touched, and if he gets touched in that area and certain things, that person might be starting to develop attraction to that process they've been exposed to. And then all sorts of complicated feelings come into place. Guilt, confusion, anger, self-doubt. So it's important to understand that with a good therapist, the person has to go through and process those kinds of feelings that occurred in that room and how those related to sexuality. Often you will hear that victims of sexual abuse, whether in the female or the male side, have intimacy problems. Oprah had a big show about this one time covering this topic. And so it's important to understand that intimacy and what happens to intimacy can get affected when you don't choose the sexual experiences that you were going through. Maybe they were imposed on you. How do you, intimacy is something that is, that is a wonderful thing that occurs when you choose to be in a particular setting. It's something that has to do when you are connected on multiple levels with a person, intimacy comes about. When you have a very hard time connecting to other people, such as disorders, for example, like PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorders, soldiers who come back from war many times will report problems of intimacy. And part of the reason is because a part of them is still in a state of anxiety and survival mode, which doesn't allow them to feel comfortable enough to be connected to other people, including their spouse. And so part of healing and the process of therapy is to go through being in a safe environment, in a safe connection in a relationship, learning to trust that setting, practicing intimacy within that setting in order to allow for a successful close connection. That is something that happens over time. It's with the support of an excellent therapist, it can be a wonderful process. Now, I want to talk about medications and sexual dysfunction. A lot of people don't know, but medications have also side effects on how you function sexually. Depression is the number one most common condition in Western society. About 20%, that means one out of five people, will suffer from a clinical level depression. And if you really want me to scare you, female doctors, it's suggested that female doctors are sometimes as high as 70% of them suffering from a clinical depression. That means it's like a diagnosable condition. That's how bad it is. And I don't want to go today why doctors, female doctors, go through depression. It's a whole Pandora box to open. But making a long story short, depression is a well-known libido killer. But also, the medications for depression, okay? Antidepressants are highly linked to sexual dysfunction and low libido. Prozac, Zoloft, other selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, SSRIs, may improve mood by raising the serotonin, but they also can lower your libido. And that is a big problem. There are other medications that are also SSRIs. They don't have this type of side effect. Wellbutrin is one of them. And also it's important to understand that you can offset some of the effect of the medication by doing constant exercises. So cardio helps to some extent combating this issue of libido. But, you know, it's not bulletproof. And it's important to understand that why we don't promote being on medication for a long time for many cases and try to find other ways of dealing with your mood problems is because of all of those types of side effects that affect other areas of life. Some medications actually cause a hypersexual behavior that you wouldn't even think about. We had one patient case that was nonstop female, that was nonstop masturbating. I discovered was the medication that she was on was causing it. But you can only imagine that it took a while to figure out what's going on with her and what are the things that come often with this type of behavior. Guilt and shame and family disowning you and rejecting you and all kinds of things. Somebody might act this way because of a brain condition and then eventually end up in prison. So that's a serious business. I know of one case where a man in his 40s was cognitively deteriorating. He eventually had a cerebral atrophy, which is the death of the brain, within 4 years. But he started his, and this was a brain infection, by the way. He was suffering from a brain infection that was not detected. Here you had a man who was never had a history of being involved with children sexually and showing unusual sexual behavior. And here he was in his 40s with an undetected brain infection. He began, started behaving inappropriately in front of a little girl. And making a long story short, ended up in the legal system because of that and actually convicted. And he was actually suffering from an actual cognitive dysfunction and a deterioration of his brain, which was understood only later. So it's important to understand that, yes, your brain is highly linked to that very, very quickly. Here's another cool fact a lot of people don't know about. Men and women converge with time. We converge sexually and behaviorally. Men become more like women. Women become more like men. So if your dad calls you and he's in his 60s or 70s and he's crying on the phone like the way your mother used to cry when she was in her 40s, there is a reason. It's because we do switch spots. And maybe God wanted it this way because maybe it helps us understand each other better, and if we do survive in a long-term relationship, we learn to appreciate that about each other. Women do tend to become more like men, more calculated, more independent, less emotional, physiologically, they become more like men, right? They lose a lot of the female hormones. They stop menstruation. And men become more like women. They become more, their testosterone comes down. So they become more emotionally thoughtful. They talk about meaning in a relationship. They are more likely to become monogamous. I think these are wonderful things. It's almost like, and it's an awful thing that to think about, well, should we promote 30-year-old women to be with 60-year-old men? But I don't know, in some ways they meet. I get, all right, I get here in the studio some yeses by, you can guess, males. But that wasn't the point of what I'm saying. The point of what I'm saying is that we can understand how people, how we can meet minds gender-wise and how we can understand each other better. And I think it's good to give that education when we're young so we can understand each other better and know how to operate better in a relationship. With that in mind, you know a little bit more about just what I do. I do promote education about the brain for a better life and well-being. Check me out at www.drdgaines.com, DEEgaines.com. And you can also find me on Facebook. If you like the show and you think it's valuable, like us and share with your friends. With that in mind, I want to wish everyone who's listening to this show lots of well-being, happiness, and cognitive and spiritual freedom. Be well.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-324-0629 and use promo code KABC. That's 800-324-0629. Or go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code KABC.
This is Nnamdi Asamoah. I play football for the Philadelphia Eagles, but what I do off the field with United Way might be more important. I'm a volunteer tutor and mentor. Why? Because over a million kids a year drop out of school, and that's not okay. It takes 12 years to create a graduate, but it takes about the same time to create a dropout. And the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be me, or it could be you. Studies show that if we get to these kids earlier, their chances are better. And kids who read well by third grade are more likely to graduate. So join me in United Way. Suit up and take the pledge. Become a volunteer reader, tutor, or mentor. Because when a child succeeds, we all succeed. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way, the Ad Council, and the National Football League.
You know, one of the things that happens when I'm traveling a lot and I'm tired and I'm not sleeping in my own bed.
You say things.
I say crazy things sometimes.
I mean, once you called me your lover, people were like, what?
And once I called you my liver.
That'd be closer.
Oh, yeah.
It's more alcohol absorbed. Let's be real. Let's be real.
The Drive Home. With Jillian Barber and John Phillips.
Weekdays 3 to 6.
On Talk Radio 790 KABC.
You're listening to The Dr. D Show about neuropsychology and well-being.
Get the knowledge you must have to live a powerful, positive life.
The Dr. D Show. Here for you.
Welcome, listeners, to the Dr. D Show. It is wonderful to have you with us again. I am Dr. D, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, talking to you today about sexuality and the brain and all the cool stuff we know about it and some more. Now, it sounds like we have a caller online. Welcome to the show.
Hi there.
Hi, who am I speaking with?
Hi, my name's Tara.
Hi, Tara. Hi. How can I help you?
Well, just a question, and it might be something that's, I guess, normal, but my boyfriend just turned 40, and I don't know if it's the timing or what it is, but he just really doesn't ever seem to be in the mood. So I'm thinking that it might be his age, it might be, you know, being a little depressed that he's out of his 30s. I'm not quite sure what it is, but I'm not sure if you've seen this before, if it's something that's common.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, one thing to think about is, first of all, the process of diagnosis is to go through a checklist of, can we rule out this, can we rule out that? So we start ruling out the things that are first physiological, and then when physiologically we're clear, we would go through the process of looking at other processes, environmental factors, such as something going on in his life. Maybe he's hitting a certain kind of an emotional or existential crisis, or there's something going on in the relationship. So going back to the beginning of it, looking at physiological stuff, you want to think about, well, here's one question. Was it sudden or was it gradual?
I would say it would be more gradual.
Okay, so it was something that was gradual. And so maybe it wasn't a type of an injury, but it could be a change in hormonal functioning. Mm-hmm. And so one thing that he would want to do right away is, first of all, get tested and find out if his hormones levels are okay. Is there a reason maybe that he's losing testosterone potentially? Or it could be other hormones that, by the way, are involved with sexuality. One of them has to also do with depression, and that's dopamine. Dopamine is very involved in the brain and sexuality, but it's also involved in making sure that we're happy and a bunch of other things, motor things as well. So we want to look at the other symptoms. Does he have any motor problems? Is he suddenly starting to suffer from depression? Or is it really very isolated just to sexuality? That's something you want to answer. And you don't need to answer that to me, mm-hmm. right? That's something he would have to go through with the doctor. Then another thing you want to think about, so he would get tested. Then you want to know if there are neurological symptoms. You want to know, does he have a blurry vision? Does he suffer from headaches? Are we thinking that there might be a tumor in the brain or anything else? And this is going far, okay, because most individuals don't have a tumor. So we wouldn't catastrophize, right, and say, well, every time we have a change, must be a tumor. It doesn't work that way. But a doctor would go through that process, would look to see if there's any neurological issues going on. Another one you would want to see is, how is his sleep at night? Is he sweating or not? Is he going through interrupted sleep? That can be associated with an umbrella of disorders. And also, by the way, hormonal changes. And then finally, you would want to look into, as I said later, dysfunction that started occurring in the bedroom. So you want to ask yourself, well, does he not have a desire altogether, or he has a desire, he goes to the bedroom, you guys are involved sexually, but then something happens where he cannot fully function. He doesn't get an erection, or he doesn't hold his erection. And then you want to know, he might lose interest altogether because of the fear that he's not going to be able to function in the bedroom. So he's rationalizing that he doesn't have an interest in it altogether. That could be another reason. And then if all of that is not there, you might want to think, well, is he interested maybe in somebody on the outside? Maybe he is romantically, and you know, yes, there is cheating that is just physical cheating, and there are individuals who are pathological cheaters, but they are a smaller percent of what we know about cheating. Vast majority of cheating occurs because, and that's whether it's a male or a female, it occurs because the person is hitting some kind of a crisis or a change. It could be a crisis in their identity, okay? They're in their 40s, they feel like they're dying, this is it, they're aging, there is no turning back, and they buy a new car and get a girlfriend on the side. But it could be for women too. After women have children, there is a certain percent of women that feel so traumatized by losing their youth, by feeling tired, unappreciated. Maybe they don't feel attractive anymore. There's a certain percent of women, and I see them, by the way, at my practice. I know this is a phenomena. They would cheat, and that's not because they don't love their husbands or they don't love their kids. They're going through an emotional crisis, okay? And more often than not, whether it's the male or the female, they would need to go through a process of figuring out what's going on and overcoming the crisis. And studies show that if you do that, if you can figure out what that crisis is in therapy and overcome that crisis, you can actually get back together well with your spouse and move on to continue with a very long, successful marriage. But it's an opportunity. That spot that you hit can be an opportunity for growth and achievement, or it can be the reason why the marriage would fall apart. Many studies show that long-term marriages survived not because there was no infidelity, but they survived because they worked through the problems and the issues, and they overcame that, and they gained something unique, such as an unusual friendship and love and support to each other that is unparalleled to any other relationship they had throughout their life. And being able to get to that stage, to that level, is what made the relationship go for the long run. So that would be another area to look into. And then I always would say, is there something going on with their career, with their sense of self? A lot of people, when they hit a stage where their career is not going to where they thought it would be, a very common one is losing your business, okay? Filing bankruptcy, that's a very big one. Feeling a lot on your shoulders, that's a big one that I noticed with males. Gigantic financial stress and commitments and liabilities where they feel there's no escape, you know, and they cognitively need a place to escape. That would be a reason. And so you would look at all of those environmental factors, and then you would also want to look at your marriage and your intimacy and see if there's something going on in your marriage that is not being addressed and you guys are drifting apart. Or if it's not a marriage, you know, long-term relationships or so. So does this make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so you could see that it gets very complicated, right? To do a good job.
Many ways to look at it.
So many ways to look at it, and so many ways that you would have to consider and figure out before you would, you know, even draw conclusions. And that would be, by the way, a responsible clinician, that's what they would do.
Right.
Okay. Look for the needle in the stack of hay. So thank you so much for calling the show. I hope this was helpful to you.
Yes, it was. Thank you so much for your help.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
So this was an excellent question because it prompted me really to share with you the complexity of sexual behavior and why people do some of the things that they do. And there's just so many things to think about, from the physiological zone to the developmental age-related changes and to the environmental factor and marital relationships and conflicts. So with that in mind, if you have any topics that you want to be covered on the show, any questions you have, I love getting feedback on messages through Facebook and your emails about areas you would love for me to cover on the show. This show is for you. It's to educate more about the brain, mental health, and human functioning. If you want to get involved, sponsor the show, share with me information that you care about, please feel free to reach me at contact@drdgaines.com. And be well.
This show furnished by NeuroHealth LLC.
My name is Meera. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way to make the community stronger. I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
On average, Angelenos spend an additional 80 hours a year behind the wheel due to traffic. And while we can't help you recoup that time, we can help you pass the time by covering the stories that impact you in a smart, clever, and sometimes hilarious way. Think of us as The Daily Show.